listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM. Hello, welcome to Viewpoints. Nice to have you with us on today's show. After 15 years in the same location, the Kingston Writers Fest is taking hold of the Screening Room Theater.
What it's going to do is really enhance that sense of intimacy that we go for with the festival. We want the festival to feel relaxed, to feel immersive. We want people in the audience to feel like they're a part of something special and that they really get the opportunity to know the author well.
We'll hurry to catch a glimpse of the Cortez Island Love Fest in BC. International artist Cosmo Sheldrake was just added to the music festival's lineup.
He brings a different type of energy to anyone else who's on the bill. He's going to be sort of like mixing a electronic with folk music. He just has an energy about him and a passion, which I think is just palpable.
To Montreal, Quebec, where Last Generation Canada is calling for Canada to adopt a national firefighting agency and to sign the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty. A couple of weeks ago, they had their hands glued to the road as a protest.
We don't want to be getting in the way of people's day-to-day lives, but we've tried everything else.
And the Region of Queens Mayor Darlene Norman won't run again in the fall election. Public pressure, insults, and political dynamics weigh in on her decision.
The cruel, the unkind, the unjust things that are said, it's just not what I was prepared for.
This and a bit more on Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
On the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Thanks for keeping us company. Boris Chassagne with you for the next half hour. First to Nova Scotia, where the Region of Queens Mayor Darlene Norman will not be running in October's municipal election. Norman first entered municipal politics in 2000 when she was elected as a councillor for the first time. The former teacher, who now lives in Port Medway, says she decided not to run again because she was frustrated with having to defend council decisions that she may have disagreed with as a mayor. She also said that she was tired of the online abuse she was subjected to over the past 4 years. She spoke with Rick Conrad, based in Liverpool, Nova Scotia.
Darlene Norman has made it official, announcing she won't seek re-election as mayor of the Region of Queens.
Simply because these last few 4 years have made me realize that it was one thing to be a counselor, it's another thing to be the mayor.
In a Facebook post on Tuesday announcing her decision, she said council's achieved many good things over the past 4 years, but she said there were other things she regrets. One of those was not building a new library.
We could have built a lovely library. It would have been open by now.
Another frustration for Norman over the past 4 years is the concentration of municipal resources in the Liverpool, Brooklyn, and Milton areas. She says council needs to find a way to improve services in other areas of Queens County, such as North Queens and other areas outside the so-called urban core of Liverpool.
Our biggest assessment areas are in rural Queens. We spend an incredible amount of money in the Liverpool, Milton, Brooklyn areas. And I'm looking around, North Queens, East and West. People are paying, incredible tax dollars in those parts of the county, despite people in our town of Liverpool who think they're paying the biggest tax dollars. I'm just finding it really difficult with the Region of Queens and trying to find a balance with spending in rural as well as central.
She said it's one of the reasons council decided to build new accessible washroom and change room facilities at Beach Meadows Beach. And she said that's one of council's accomplishments she's proud of. Others include improvements in accessibility at municipally owned facilities such as the Astor Theater and Beach Meadows, working with a wind farm developer in Milton to create more renewable energy, advocating for new cell towers in North Queens, and supporting affordable housing initiatives by Queens Neighborhood Cooperative Housing.
Those are good things. Those are really positive things for Queens. There's been so many more benefits than disappointment.
Norman said another reason she won't be reoffering in October's municipal election is the abuse she said she's received on social media.
The cruel, the unkind, the unjust things that are said. You know, I've had to bite my tongue, and I guess I should almost cut off my fingers not to write back some things on some posts that I've read. But it's just not what I was prepared for, and I just don't want it anymore. I'm a really good sleeper, and when I don't sleep at night because of stuff at council or going on, I have too many people my age dropping dead, and I want to do positive things.
She says she's not sure what she'll do after October, but it will include spending more time with her young grandson in Shelburne, and she plans to volunteer in her community of Port Medway and work on some of her art projects.
But I want to get out and do something that I want to do that doesn't have the stressors that being the mayor does.
Regardless of some of that stress, she says she's grateful for the opportunity to have been mayor of the region of Queens for the past 4 years.
I'd just like to thank the people of Queens for providing me this wonderful privilege to represent Queens County. We are a wonderful county. We have some of the best people in the world, and we are very attractive to people around the world who want to live here. So let's just, you know, welcome newcomers, regardless of what country or what culture they are. Diversity is wonderful for us. It makes us stronger. And just say thanks to the people of Queens.
The municipal election is set for October 19th. Former teacher Terry Doucette and business consultant Scott Christian have already announced their campaigns for mayor. I'm Rick Conrad.
Candace Vetter in Embrun, Ontario, and you're tuned into Viewpoints. Follow us on X at Frequency News. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
It's been 1 week since Aéroport de Montréal secured an injunction against climate protesters who led days of disruptions outside Trudeau Airport. Now the protesters from Last Generation Canada are calling for a meeting with airport leadership. Last Generation Canada wants Canada to adopt a national firefighting agency and to sign the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty. The group was hit with a provisional injunction barring future protest activities after they glued their hands to the road outside the airport and splashed pink paint on airport windows, resulting in 8 protester arrests. Jules Bugel in Montreal, Quebec.
It seems like Montreal's newest climate action group is going to stick. Last week, members of the group Last Generation Canada made headlines when they glued their hands to the pavement outside Trudeau Airport, blocking access for several hours on Wednesday through Friday. An additional action on Saturday saw protesters dousing themselves in an oil-like substance and entering the intersection at René Lévesque and Robert Bourassa in downtown Montreal. Now, the group has been in Montreal since last November. Before that, they were known as On to Ottawa. And their first demand is for Canada to adopt a national firefighting service. It's an idea that was floated during wildfire season last year, but one that's once again proved timely in the wake of fires that have burned much of Jasper to the ground. Here's Last Generation spokesperson Laura Sullivan.
Last summer, we saw hundreds of thousands of people forced from their homes because of wildfires. We saw the entire country choking on smoke. We saw 9 firefighters die in the line of duty, and our government was not able to handle that. We had to bring in the military. We had to bring in international forces. We know that a national firefighting agency isn't going to solve the overarching climate catastrophe that's threatening our lives, but it's a no-brainer demand.
That's not all protesters are asking for. They want Canada to sign on to the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty, which wants to put an end to fossil fuel use by 2030. The treaty has been endorsed by local governments in Vancouver, Toronto, and here in Montreal.
We know that to end the fossil fuel era, we need to do this on an international scale. And our politicians have had conference after conference where they should have been making these decisions and should have been coordinating this, but have been failing on every single front with no repercussion. And the devastation is falling on ordinary people across the world right now.
Sullivan says the group is committed to nonviolent disruptions, a push for action on the climate crisis, even if they aren't always popular with the people using the airport that day.
We know that disruption is annoying. We don't want to be getting in the way of people's day-to-day lives, but we've tried everything else. We've written petitions. We've talked to our MPs. We've gone on marches. Even here in Montreal, we saw 500,000 people on the streets demanding change that's required for our survival. But our governments didn't do anything except continue to expand the fossil fuel industry.
Now, earlier today, the group called for a meeting with the Aéroport de Montréal president and CEO Yves Beauchamp, after Beauchamp and the ADM secured a provisional injunction against the protesters. The July 30th Superior Court decision prohibits Last Generation Canada from holding any kind of action or protest at the airport, or encouraging others to do so until August 9th, when a hearing for an interlocutory or more long-term injunction will take place. An initial injunction was first granted on the 26th. An ADM press release called the group's actions totally unacceptable. But Sullivan says they're necessary and are born of desperation.
Fires are blocking highways across BC and people can't access their homes or access clean water. So we know that us getting in the way peacefully like this is annoying, but look, it's like we're in a house, it's on fire, and we are screaming, hey, let's get out of the house.
Eight of the group's protesters were arrested last week as part of the disruptions. But Sullivan says with climate change, there's much more at stake than risking arrest. She says it's in the name of the group itself.
We are the last generation that can do something about this. Otherwise, we will be the last generation.
When reached by CQT, an Aéroport de Montréal spokesperson said in a statement that, in general, the right to demonstrate is still allowed on the airport site, but in such a way that airport operations are not obstructed. They also expressed their full intention to obtain a permanent injunction against the group. Environment and Climate Change Canada did not respond to a request for comment from CQT. A spokesperson for Public Safety Canada said in a statement that in Canada, provinces and territories own and manage 90% of Canada's forests, and each province and territory is responsible for managing wildfires in its jurisdiction, but that the federal government works closely to coordinate and assist in the response. I'm Jules Pigel, reporting with the Local Journalism Initiative. Thanks for listening.
This is By Being With You from Cosmo Sheldrake.
I'll be the moon, you'll be the sun, we'll make the day go. You'll slowly rise and I will fall.
Well, we do not know if you'll catch this story in time to run to the Love Fest on Cortes Island, British Columbia, but you'll at least hear a bit about it. The festival just announced that international artist Cosmo Sheldrake was added to the Love Fest, a one-day music festival lineup. Sheldrake is a UK-based multi-instrumentalist and producer who grew up partially on Cortes Island, British Columbia. He has been releasing music for 10 years now, and his third album, Eye to the Ear, was released on April 12. Alternative, sometimes experimental, he personally kind of reminds me of musician Robert Wyatt. The Love Fest also features many other artists. Louis Belcourt spoke with Benji Duke, co-producer of the Love Fest.
Yeah, well, we're quite excited. Cosmo Sheldrake is joining the bill, which is pretty cool. We've got such a good varied selection of music on the bill this year. And to have Cosmo come and join in is just going to give it just another edge, which is kind of exciting.
Along with this new addition, Cosmo, who else is headlining this year at Lovefest?
Well, this year we have Adonis Puentes will be coming with an all-star band this year. Adonis was there last year. For those of you who went, he had a real family band on. They did all kinds of like Buena Vista Social Club, all kinds of Cuban classics. This year he's bringing his own personal band who he tours all across North America with. So that's going to be fantastic. We have Elise LeBlanc will be here with her trio, playing some sort of old country, which is going to be really cool. She has the most fantastic young fiddle player with her. Anyone who saw them at the Manson's Hall will know just how terrific that guy is. We have Anne Mortifee is going to be doing a retrospective of her career, which is super exciting because obviously everyone on the island knows who Anne Mortifay is. She's one of the most talented singers you could possibly imagine. And but for her to actually do a retrospective over the last 40 years of her musical career is just going to be super exciting.
Awesome.
Yeah, who else have we got there on there? We've got Doc Fingers will be coming over as well. He's a great blues guy. Yeah, there's a whole slew of acts.
I did and I don't and I do. This is Cosmo Sheldrake from the album Eye of the Year.
I did and I don't. I wind down the road. I would but I didn't. I'll patch up a hole for you. Come trickling down woods with me.
And why should people that were already planning on going to Love Fest, why should they be excited to see Cosmo play and for his addition to the festival?
Well, Cosmo, as you know, he's a well-known person on this island. He brings a different type of energy to anyone else who's on the bill. He's going to be sort of like mixing a electronic with folk music. He just has an energy about him and a passion, which I think is just palpable. I saw him play at Love Fest maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And it was just a beautiful dance party. So I think it's just going to give an extra edge, which we didn't previously have before. It's just going to be another sort of type of music which we weren't covering. So it's just going to be an extra. It's just going to be a great value add, and it's going to be a great show.
Louis Belcour, Cortez Island.
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. radio@frequencynews.ca.
To Ontario now, where the Carlow Estates Winery is hosting their 100% vegan culinary long table event and are hoping to set a world record for the most people partaking in a vegan dinner at the long table. The Carlow event features celebrity vegan chefs serving up a 7-course vegan dinner at the Vineyard on the path to the Drystone Bridge covering Hobbs Creek. Located in Prince Edward County, Carlow is the world's first certified vegan winery and has been producing wine since 2010. Here's Brenda Little in Picton, Ontario.
Carlow Estates Winery is hoping to enter the Guinness Book of World Records Saturday, August 10th, when they host their 100% vegan culinary long table event at the winery in Prince Edward County. The Carlow event will feature celebrity vegan chefs from California, Calgary, and the county. Sherry Carlow tells us more about the event.
Well, the way this happened is Mike of Gusta Gasthaus and Company, Chef Mike Mueller, is an expert at doing culinary experiences that include a long table and a whole bunch of surprises that I don't know if I'm privy to talk about. But he had come to the county to do some long table dinners here in the county that are coming up, and of course marketing it well. I saw it and all the cool kids saw it, and so I reached out to him to see if he needed any wine, and so we connected and resonated with each other, and then he came over to taste the wine, and I guess he liked it. And in that conversation I told him that when we built the bridge, that I had always had this vision that we were going to have a long table dinner on the other side of the bridge. But I said, here's the catch, Mike. You can do a long table dinner. I would love you to do it, but I'm going to challenge you to do it vegan. And then the idea was that the money that we would save, like the meat savings from not having to buy any animal products, we would donate to some sort of Save the Planet organization. So we ended up choosing Jane Goodall. We have an ongoing relationship with the Jane Goodall Institute of Canada. Yeah. And we've done some charity work with them, and they do a lot of stuff besides saving the chimpanzees. They do a lot of stuff to help not only save the planet, but to save people, to teach people how to be self-sustaining and, to grow their own food and have clean water. And because if we don't look after each other, they can't look after their endangered species either, because they're in a desperate situation. So So it's a really great cause, and it's something that resonates for all of us. We all want to look after our beautiful home, so we thought it was a good cause to choose.
The Drystone Bridge was built in 2007 by Sherry's late husband, Richard. It covers the Hubs Creek that runs through the vineyard, and it is one of the largest of its kind in North America. The bridge will be the backdrop for the event. Sherry chats more about the bridge.
We want an authentic destination at the winery that people can say, I was there. And so the keystone that's in the bridge is actually our logo. And it just talks about how we all work as a team to do the best that we can. Because if we all stick together, then you have this beautiful thing. But the minute that one person falls out the keystone, then the whole thing can fall down together. So it's kind of the emblem of the winery.
The 93-acre property was purchased by Sherry Carlo and her late husband Richard in 2005, with planting beginning in 2006. Wine production started in 2008, and doors opened to the public in 2010. Sherry, a longtime vegan, had been adamant that she would not drink Richard's wine, but to her surprise, he had been using a vegan process all along. Sherry talks about her vegan journey.
I realized that I was basically vain and cheap, because I realized if I ate vegan in college, that I could save money and I could keep my weight down. And then I went to a festival at Harbourfront, put on by the Toronto Vegetarian Association, and walked into the wrong room at the wrong time, or the right time, as the case may be, and saw like how animals are treated in slaughterhouses. And I was so appalled that I wanted nothing to do with it. And so I just went vegan. And then, of course, I fell off the turnip truck when I got into advertising. And then it wasn't until I moved out to the county full time in 2010 that, you know, late at night again, not much to do. So I'm on the internet and I'm seeing how animals are treated in slaughterhouses. And I was like, that is it. I am not participating in this anymore. And I found out that wine was also not vegan. So I told my late husband, Richard, that I would not be drinking wine with him anymore either, because I wasn't participating. And so he set out to prove to me that he had been accidentally making his wine vegan all along, because he wanted me to drink with him. So that's why vegan. But it turns out that we actually save our carbon footprint set by 70% by doing plant-based approach to running the winery and our lifestyle.
What is vegan wine and what is the difference? It's all about the process during the fining and chapitalization steps where animal or animal byproducts are not used. Egg whites and powdered milk are commonly used as coagulants by winemakers, but the Carlo vegan process uses bentonite clay. When chapitalization is necessary, they use sugar sourced from a local supplier. Plans are in place for the Vegan Long Table event, August 10th, but of course, all eyes will be on the weather. I'm Brenda Little.
With Viewpoints.
And we close our show at the Kingston Writers Festa, who is making its move. The Screening Room Theater, located in the heart of downtown Kingston, is set to be the primary venue for this year's festival after 15 years spent at the Holiday Inn. The independent theater will be host to onstage authors events, the festival bookshop, and Kingston Writers Fest box office during the 16th annual festival in September. The fest will also spread throughout downtown Kingston, with multiple new off-site locations nearby, including The Mansion and Something in the Water Brewing Company. More with Christina Loring in Kingston, Ontario.
There are some pretty big changes this year, including a new home base after 15 years at the Holiday Inn. How did the Screening Room enter the conversation to be the venue for this year?
Well, I'll say, you know, there's been a lot of changes. You know, we're always evolving as a festival. And I'll say that post-COVID, things have changed quite a bit for us. And some of that has meant the size of the audience that we have. So, I mean, there's pros and cons with that. But one of the pros is that with smaller audiences, we were able to explore new venues. And one of the things we've really been focusing on, I think, since we came back with live programming in 2022 is the idea of really celebrating this amazing community that we're a part of. And so when it became a possibility that we could use the screening room, we were all really excited about that. We really want the festival to feel like you're going to an event, right? Like you're not going to a convention center. You're not sitting on a folding chair. You're actually like, you know, it's exciting. It's like the excitement of going to the movies. And we wanted to kind of capture some of that for the festival as well as really getting the festival in the heart of downtown Kingston and celebrating the amazing independent locations that we have here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the screening room, it's a nonprofit and it's definitely a beloved landmark here in Kingston. Mm-hmm. How do you think this location change is going to impact the festival in terms of, you know, both the location right downtown, the space available within the screening room, and just the energy?
Yeah, I think the energy is one of the things I'm really excited about. The feedback I've been getting from people, as I've mentioned this, is a lot of excitement. As you say, I mean, the screening room is known and loved. It's already established as an arts hub. You know, it hosts Reel Out, it hosts KCFF. So there's that. People are used to going there for cultural events. It's got the best popcorn in town, which doesn't hurt either. I think what it's going to do is really enhance that sense of intimacy that we go for with the festival. We want the festival to feel relaxed, to feel immersive. We want people in the audience to feel like they're a part of something special and that they really get the opportunity to know the author well. One of the fabulous things that we're working on is having a pop-up novel idea right downstairs in the main lobby of the screening room. So I know we're not far from the actual novel idea bookstore, but people won't have to leave the building to buy their books this year either, which I think like that was a big thing for us. So we do have some off-site locations for some of the events that we know are going to be really big, but we've tried to keep them all within walking distance and just I think it'll be a lot of fun for people to kind of explore downtown.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I couldn't think of a better place, honestly. And I was wondering if you could get into some of the events that will be hosted within the screening room this year.
So opening night, we have a great conversation between local artist Jermaine Marshall, also known as Jay Marsh. He's a local poet, spoken word, and musical performer. He's going to be talking with Danny Ramadan. Danny is an amazing human being. He fled Syria as a refugee because he was being persecuted for his sexuality. And then he came to Canada. And since he's been here, he's raised over $300,000 for LGBTQ plus refugees. He's been sainted. He's written 7 books. So he's got a memoir out this year. And it's a really, really fascinating read. And, you know, he's a very kind human, but he also doesn't pull his punches. So I think it'll be challenging for the reader in the idea of, like, you know, Canada, yeah, it's a better place in some ways than where he came from. But it's not all just sunshine and roses. And, like, there are some really hard things about having to leave the home that you love, even if it is problematic. So Thursday evening, we're really excited. We have Tanya Talaga. Tanya is an award-winning author of 7 Fallen Feathers, and she has created this incredible Indigenous-focused look at Canadian history from the perspective of her great-great-grandmother on. It's a look at generational trauma. It's a look at the history that we've buried and the history that we're uncovering now, called The Knowing. It's not all intense, heavy things, though. We have a really fun Saturday morning event based around this book called Secret Sex. So a couple dozen Canadian authors wrote anonymous sex stories for this book. Not something that you necessarily think of Canadian writers doing, but we'll have a few of the authors on stage as well as the person who put together the anthology. And people who are reading will be reading their favorite stories, not the ones they wrote. So I think it'll just be a little bit of fun. Saturday night, we have The Big Idea. That's one of our marquee events. And we're looking at the fate of democracy in North America. Not a small topic. It's amazing to see, like, how the Kingston arts community, like, continues to be so strong. Like, you know, we programmed, I think, about a dozen local authors this year. And that was not even like everyone that's published this year, right? So like it's a good problem to have, but it's amazing to be able to see that that creative spark and that that group of artists is still going strong here in Kingston.
As McCulley stated, to learn more, you can visit their website at kingstonwritersfest.ca.
Well, that's it for us this week. Thanks to our journalists, Christina Laurie, Jules Bugiel, Rick Conrad, Brenda Little, and Louis Belcourt. To our national editors, Maureen McEwen and Victoria Fenner. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the local...